हरे हे सहनावत सहनाभुनक्तु सहवेयं भरवावहै तेजस्विनावहि नमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासनि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Section 124. Vaishampayana has said, after the birth of Kunti's sons and also of the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, the daughter of the king of the Madras privately addressed Pandu, saying, O slayer of foes, I have no complaint even if thou beest unpropitious to me. I have, O sinless one, also no complaint that though by birth I am superior to Kunti, yet I am inferior to her in station. I do not grieve, O thou of Kuru's race, that Gandhari hath obtained 100 sons. This, however, is my grief, that while Kunti and I are equal, I should be childless, while I should so chance that thou shouldest have offspring by Kunti alone. If the daughter of Kunti Bhoja should so provide that I should have offspring, she would then be really doing me a great favor and benefiting thee likewise. She being my rival, I feel a delicacy in soliciting any favor of her. If thou beest, O King, propitiously disposed to me, then ask her to grant my desire. Hearing her, Pandu replied, O Madri, I do revolve this matter often in my own mind, but I have hitherto hesitated to tell thee anything, not knowing how thou wouldest receive it. Now that I know that what your wishes are, I shall certainly strive after that end. I think that, asked by me, Kunti will not refuse. Vaishampayana continued, after this, Pandu addressed Kunti in private, saying, O Kunti, grant me some more offspring for the expansion of my race and for the benefit of the world. O Blessed One, provide thou that I myself, my answers and thine also, may always have the funeral cake offered to us. O do what is beneficial to me, and grant me and the world what indeed is the best of benefits. Do what indeed may be difficult for thee, moved by the desire of achieving undying fame. Behold, Indra, even though he hath obtained the sovereignty of the celestials, doth yet for fame alone perform sacrifices. O handsome one, Brahman is well acquainted with the Vedas, and having achieved high ascetic merit, do yet for fame alone approach the spiritual masters with reverence. So also all royal sages and brahmanas possessed of ascetic wealth have achieved for fame only the most difficult of ascetic feat. Therefore, O blameless one, rescue this Madri as by a raft, by granting her the means of obtaining offspring, and achieve thou imperishable fame by making her a mother of children. Right. So in here we see this is an emotional point. So the field is first made, then the very last sentence is the point. Right? So that's important. If it's an intellectual thing, you make the point first because it's then accepted, or at least then you can contemplate it because you're dealing with intelligence. Then everything after that you speak, the intelligence knows what to refer it back to. And then finally say, oh, okay, now I understand. Right? Because intelligence does not accept or reject. It only discriminates. Right? So if it has the point to deal with, then as you explain it, it can discriminate. right? Better. But the mind accepts and rejects. So if he says this point first, right, and she rejects it, the mind rejects it, then whatever you say after that, it doesn't matter, because then the mind has made its opinion. So intelligence is not necessarily going to have any effect, at least not at this point. Maybe at another time. Does that make sense? So therefore, you have to prepare the field first. So the whole thing, the environment and all that, then when that is favorable, then you say what it is that will be done by that field. Yes?
So like when we want to say something, then if you're not sure the person will agree immediately, then you want to bring up your point last, right?
Yeah.
But then it's like recently we're learning Pancha Vinyaya today, which is like basic. But in the beginning you bring your point, and then again you bring your point. So then is that just a different way? Or
no, it's a matter of, it's the same 5 points are used. Means you're going to make your point, you're going to expand on the point, you're going to give all the examples and defeat any doubts. Then you're going to conclude it and then, you know, synthesize and then conclude it. Right? So all it is there you're going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's how the intelligence works. Right? So it's still the same presentation. Just when you deal with the mind, you start with 3. That's all. And then when you can, then you work in the other one. Does that make sense? So basically you go 3, 4, 5, because in 5, then you have your conclusion. Right? But it's just, on the mind, it's because it's delicate. You don't want it to reject at any point, because once it's rejected, it won't accept very easily. Right? Because it's based on emotions, based on other things that are experienced, which are much more solid to the living entity than intellect. You understand? If somebody's just intellectual, that's all they're there, then the others don't matter. They won't have any problems with social issues because they don't have a social life, really. You know what I'm saying? But in these things where there are, but you notice in presenting it, it's very pleasant. So when someone starts talking like this, his wife will know something's up. Otherwise, why is he saying all that? He's already asked her for children. More. She said no. So now either he's asking her to reconsider, which is something she's already said no on, or he's asking that Madri has children. Right? Because as a vanaprastha, he's not going to get married again. He's not going to say, so therefore I want to marry again so that... No, he's not going to do that. So she knows something's up. So therefore, if it's not done pleasantly and nicely, why will she listen? Does that make sense? So because it's pleasant and nice, it's nice to hear. So therefore you listen. Right? And then wait, okay, what's the trip? What's the point? But it's nice. But if it's not nice what's presented, why one will listen? Does that make sense? See? It's just the way of doing. It's the way of dealing. Right? If you're cooking and the sabji and the fire's too hot, whose fault is it? The sabjis? The pot? The spoon? The gute? Who? Your fault. Okay, what if you're driving the car and it slides off the road? Whose fault is that? The road? The car? The tires, of course. Okay. What if the alarm clock goes off and you don't get up? Whose fault is that? Okay, so then if all these positions, it's always your fault in action, why is it when you're dealing with another person, it's always their fault? Does that make sense? If you're dealing with things, it's always your fault. If you're dealing with people, it's always their fault. No, and which is more delicate to deal with, things or people? Okay, what if it's nitroglycerin? Still is people. Okay, so then, because at least that one you have to shake it a little bit. The other one is just one word or a look, and then that's it. Okay, so then, is that understood? Right? That's what all this is. One of the main things all this is trying to explain to you is it's us. And if we want things to go nice for us, We have to take the responsibility to, you know, build the bridge, get over, you know. So then we have to take the responsibility to look at it, how we can best make it work. Right? Not it's all the other people. No, it's how, what can we do? Right? Does that make sense? Of course, if it's an area that'll be out of your ability or it's not necessary, that's another thing. But the point is you have to decide. If you're going to deal with it, you have to take the responsibility. If you don't want to take the responsibility, don't deal with it. Does that make sense? Like that. So these are very important. You see this regularly going on. There'll be intellectual presentations, there'll be these emotional presentations. Right? In other words, for the whether the, you're taking the intelligence is central or the mind is central. Right? Does that make sense? Even you take the intelligence as central, you're trying to get the mind to accept the point. But it doesn't have an opinion necessarily, but you're using intelligence. Or it has an opinion, but it's agreeing to use intelligence as the medium of this decision. Right? But if the mind is not doing that, it's leaving itself as the decision, you know, medium, then you have to use this method. Right? Does that make sense? Just like in logic, you go sambandha avideya prayojana. You have a relationship, you have a process to offer that operate the relationship, you get a result from that. Very logical. But the mind doesn't work like that. It goes from relationship, what you can gain from the relationship, then it will act. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Is the same thing, orders are a little bit different. That's all. Okay? Very, very important. It cannot be underestimated how important this is for dealing with people. Right? Because if your relationships are not going well with people, and you're interacting with them, then don't blame the other person. Blame yourself. Don't even blame yourself. Just do something about it. No need to blame anybody. Just do something. Does that make sense? Right? Very important. This one point would make so much of the social interactions of the devotees better. Right? But it has to be pleasant. It doesn't mean that you just use, you know, out of the textbook, you know, explanations. Okay, you know, what does, you know, Dale Carnegie say, or what does, what's the other guy, the Baldy? Very popular. Huh? Covey, you know, or Covey. Not bad name, right? Supacharya's got that name also, but he's not. Oh no, he's bald also. But he'll have a sika. That's the difference. That's how you can tell them the difference between the two Kavis. One's got a sika. Right? All these different persons, whoever it is, every year a new one comes up. You just take what they say straight, it'll work in that situation they explained it in. You put it in another situation, it won't work. Otherwise, if it did work, why is there a new book? Right? Chanakya wrote a book how many thousand years ago? People still follow it, still works today. Right? There's only one book on Arthashastra in India. Only one. You don't need another one. Right? Does that make sense? But Western Artha books, every year you need a new book. Because the last one stopped working. Because you already used that example. It didn't work anymore. Does that make sense? Okay. Thus addressed by her lord, Kunti readily yielded and said unto Madri, think thou without loss of time of some celestial, and thou shalt certainly attain from him a child like unto him. Reflecting for a few moments, Madri thought of the twin Ashwins, who coming unto her with speed begat upon her two sons that were twins named Nakula and Sahadev, unrivaled on earth for personal beauty. As soon as they were born, an incorporeal voice said, in energy and beauty, these twins shall transcend even the twin Ashwinis themselves. Indeed, possessed of great energy and beauty, they illuminated the whole region. Now here, their sons surpass them. But as we've seen, demigods generally don't like anybody to surpass them, right? Was it what was this? Chitrata? No, Chitra. Chitrangada, right? I mean, a human head is the same quality as him, a name as him, just a name, not even, you know, like that. And there was a fight, right? Indra's always worried if someone's doing anything. So how is it the Ashwinis will allow this? Because it's their sons, right? Then you don't mind that the son surpasses, right? That's the principle. Is that the teacher, the father, the leader, anybody who is cultivating or developing people, then for them, somebody is actually becomes better at it than them, they're quite happy. Right? Someone else, that's another question. That's up to the individual. But if it's like that, then they want them to know and be able to cultivate and be better. Right? O king, after all the children were born, the rishis dwelling on the mountain of 100 peaks uttered blessings on them and effectually performing the first rites of birth, bestowed appellations on them. The eldest of Kunti's children was called Yudhishthira, the second Bhimasena, and the third Arjuna, and of Madri's sons, the firstborn of the twins was called Nakula, and the next Sahadev. And those foremost sons, born in an interval of 1 year after one another, looked like an embodied period of 5 years. King Pandu, beholding his children of celestial beauty and of superabundant energy, great strength and prowess, and of largeness of soul, rejoiced exceedingly. The children became great favorites of the rishis, as also of their wives, dwelling on the mountain of 100 peaks. Sometime after, Pandu again requested Kunti on behalf of Madri, addressed, O King, by her lord in private, Kunti replied, having given her the formula of invocation only once, she hath, O King, managed to obtain 2 sons. Have I not been thus deceived by her? I fear, O King, that she will soon surpass me in the number of her children. This indeed is the way of all wicked women. Fool that I was, I did not know that by invoking the twin Ash gods, I could obtain at one birth 2 children. I beseech thee, O King, do not command me any further. Let this be the boon granted by thee to me. Right? In other words, she has 3 children. Now, depending on who she calls, what if she calls the Maruts, right? There's 49 of them, right? You know, they're considered as one group, the Maruts, right? So that's right there, you know, so that's what, yes. Means, why did she have 2? Because there's 2 of them, so she had 1 child from each. Right? No, it does. Here, she just asked, so it's even Kunti, who's making the point herself, she didn't know that by asking demigods that come in groups, that you therefore you would get group kids, right? You know? Like that. So she didn't know that, so she's making the point now. You know, she could ask another group and therefore get more kids than her. You know? Yes.
Also, it seems to me that the children, they took some time to born, not like immediately, like other celestial children. Generally, celestial children born immediately.
I guess it depends on the situation. You see here that they're born a year apart, but that doesn't necessarily mean, it doesn't say whether they took birth according to human rules or according to demigod rules. It doesn't say. You know, but the point is they're a year apart, like that. So then, and it worked. But at the same time as Bhima Yudhishthira was born the first year. Means Gandhari was pregnant, but because she didn't give birth. Wasn't to give birth for 4 years in the second year, then Yudhishthira was born. But then, it said that Bhima was born. I mean, then Duryodhana was born 2 years later, and Bhima was born. But at the same time, you get the idea of Nakula and Sahadeva. Okay, Right? So therefore, she's the senior queen, so therefore it's naturally then she'll have more children. Right? Say again? Yeah, pecking order, right? Something has to be there to maintain. So she has two now. If she had only had one child, and she had three, then she'd probably say, give the Bhunik mantra again. Right? Then she'd have two, and she would probably stop at that point. But, or she might have let it go to three, then it's equal. But now that she knows that, you know, this group, how you say? Group children, yes, you know, like that. Thus, O King, were born into Pandu five sons who were begotten by celestials and were endued with great strength and who all lived to achieve great fame and expand the Kurura race. Right? So, here making that request, Pandu didn't ask any further. Right? In other words, he didn't go, hey, what's the trip? You know, hey, I want kids, like that. Wife's supposed to follow the husband, this, that, blah. Okay, that's nice. But the point is he's supposed to take care of her. Right? So she's made this request, so then he honors it. Right? Does that make sense? Because technically he only has to have one son for his rights to the demigods, to the forefathers. So having more than that is simply his desire. Right? So now he's got five. He can't complain. Does that make sense? Each bearing every auspicious mark on his person, handsome like Soma, proud like the lion, and well skilled in the use of the bow, and of leonine tread, breast, heart, eyes, neck, and prowess. Those foremost of men, resembling the celestials themselves in might, began to grow up. So they're handsome like Soma, right? Why Soma? Why not somebody else? Like that, he's pleasant, right? The moon is very pleasant. You know, Soma means the qualities of water, rasa, so there'll be fineness of features, there'll be roundness, you know, of the face, there'll be, you know, fullness of the face, there'll be, you know, large eyes, there'll be any of these kind of elements. Right? You want to say something?
What does it mean by proudness of a lion?
Proudness of a lion. Because a lion is very confident. They're never, whatever animals are there, they never feel intimidated, right? Because they're the king. That's why they're called the king. Any other animals there, they're comfortable. Yes?
That's just a lion doesn't know fear.
Doesn't know fear. Lion doesn't know fear. Like that. Yeah, I've only seen surprise, but not fear. Right? At one time, what was it? In the Atarshapan, there were two big male lions sitting down by the water hole, and then a female lion walked by, and they didn't even look. So the female lion, having walked by them, turned around, walked back to the biggest of them, you know, and walked over, and then when she's right next to him, he turned his face, and she slapped him, and then walked off. And then he was, like, shocked. You know? That's the only time I've ever seen something like that. You ever watch Atarshapan, you can see it. Like that. Then leonine tread. What does that mean? On the bottom of their feet, it looked like it had treads like on, you know, something like that.
The gate.
Yeah, the gate. How they'd walk would be very confident, very proud. Like that. The breast. You ever notice? What does that mean? Very hairy, right? Yeah. No, it means you've seen lions. The chest is very big, and then their waist is super small, right? So very big chest. Then heart. That means like that. No fear, confident. Eyes. Then very focused, very piercing, right? That's why Kshatriya women, they could handle the Kshatriya men because they're so powerful. Just their gaze is just so powerful, like that. Their neck, right? So very solid, very full. Their prowess, you know, so lions are very, you know, they're very accomplished. Yeah. And so this is talking about when they were kids. And then it said, resembling the celestials themselves in might, began to grow up. So this is as kids are like that, you know. Okay. And beholding them and their virtues growing with years, right? So that means the older they got, the more virtues, right? He didn't say. And then everything went great until they turned 13, and then they became punks. No, it didn't say. It doesn't say that. Yeah. Like that. I looked very carefully just to make sure that it doesn't say. Okay. The rishis dwelling on that snow-capped sacred mountain were filled with wonder. The five Pandavas and the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, that propagator of the Kuru race, grew up rapidly like a cluster of lotuses in a lake. Section 125. Vaishampayana said, beholding his five handsome sons growing up before him in that great forest on the charming mountain slope, Pandu felt the last might of his arms revive once more. One day in the season of spring, which maddens every creature, the king, accompanied by his wife Madri, began to rove in the woods where every tree had put forth new blossoms. He beheld all around palashas, tilakas, mangoes, and champaks, parihadrakas, karnikaras, and ashoks, kesharas, atimukas, and kuruvakas, with swarms of maddened bees sweetly humming about. There were flowers of blossoming parijatas, with the kokilas pouring forth their melodies from under every twig, echoing with the sweet hums of the black bees. He beheld also various other kinds of trees, bent down by the weight of their flowers and fruits. There were also many fine pools of water overgrown with hundreds of fragrant lotuses. Beholding all this, Pandu felt the soft influence of desire. Roving like a celestial with a light heart amidst such scenery, Pandu was alone with his wife Madri in a semi-transparent attire. Beholding the youthful Madri thus attired, the king's desire flamed up like a forest fire. And ill able to suppress his desire thus kindled at the sight of his wife, of eyes like lotus petals, he was completely overpowered. The king then seized her against her will, but Madri, trembling in fear, resisted him to the best of her might. Consumed by desire, he forgot everything about his misfortune. O thou of Kuru's race, unrestrained by the fear of the rishi's curse, and impelled by fate, the monarch, overpowered by passion, forcibly sought the embraces of Madri, as if he wished to put an end to his own life. His reason, thus beguiled by the great destroyer himself, by intoxicating his senses, was itself lost with his life. And the Kuru king Pandu, a virtuous soul, thus succumbed to the inevitable influence of time while united with his wife. Then Madri, clasping the body of her senseless lord, began to weep aloud. Kunti with her sons and the twins of Madri, hearing those cries of grief, came to the spot where the king lay in that state. Then, O king, Madri addressed Kunti in a piteous voice, said, come hither alone, O Kunti, and let the children stay there. Hearing those words, Kunti, bidding the children stay, ran with speed, exclaiming, woe to me. Beholding both Pandu and Madri lying prostrate on the ground, she went in grief and affliction, saying, O passions under complete control, this hero, O Madri, hath all along been watched by me with care. How did he then forget the rishi's curse, approach thee with enkindled desire? O Madri, this foremost of men should have been protected by thee. Why didst thou tempt him into solitude? Always melancholy at the thought of the rishi's curse, How came he to be merry with thee in solitude? O princess of Valika, more fortunate than myself, thou art really to be envied, for thou hast seen. For thou hast seen the face of our Lord suffused with gladness and joy. Madri then replied, saying, revered sister, with tears in my eyes I resisted the king, but he could not control himself, bent on, as it were, making the rishi's curse true. Kunti then said, I am the older of his wedded wives. The chief religious merit must be mine. Therefore, O Madri, prevent me not from achieving that which must be achieved. I must follow our Lord to the region of the dead. Rise up, O Madri, and yield me his body. Rear thou these children. Madri replied, saying, I do clasp our Lord yet and have not allowed him to depart. Therefore I shall follow him. My appetite hath not been appeased. Thou art my older sister. Oh, let me have thy sanction. This foremost one of the Bharata princes had approached me, desiring to unite. His appetite unsatiated, shall I not follow him to the region of Yama to gratify him? O revered one, if I survive thee, it is certain I shall not be able to rear thy children as if they were mine. I will not sin touch me on that account. But thou, O Kunti, shall be able to bring up my sons as if they were thine. The king, in seeking me wishfully, hath gone to the region of spirits. Therefore my body should be burnt with his. O revered sister, withhold not thy sanction to this which is agreeable to me. Thou wilt certainly bring up the children carefully. That it indeed would be very agreeable to me. I have no other direction to give. Vaishampayana continued, having said this, the daughter of the king of Madras, the wedded wife of Pandu, ascended the funeral pyre of her lord, that bull among men. Section 126. Vaishampayana said, the godlike Rishi is wise in counsels. Beholding the death of Pandu, consulted with one another and said, the virtuous and renowned King Pandu, abandoning both sovereignty and kingdom, came hither for practicing ascetic austerities and resigned himself to the ascetics dwelling on this mountain. He hath hence ascended to heaven, leaving his wife and infant sons as a trust in our hands. Our duty now is to repair to his kingdom with his offspring and his wife. Vaishampayana continued, then those godlike rishis of magnanimous hearts, crowned with ascetic success, summoning one another, resolved to go to Hastinapur with Pandu's children ahead, desiring to place them in the hands of Bhishma and Dhritarashtra. The ascetics set out that very moment, taking with them those children, Kunti, and the two dead bodies. Though unused to toil all her life, the affectionate Kunti, now regarded as very short, the really long journey she had to perform, having arrived at Kuru Jungla within a short time, the illustrious Kunti presented herself at the principal gate. The ascetics then charged the porters to inform the king of their arrival. Right, so they didn't just go in. They came to the main gate, stopped there, and then sent the messengers in. The men carried the message in a trice to the court. Hearing of the arrival of thousands, of Charanas and Munis, the citizens of Hastinapur were filled with wonder. It was soon after sunrise that they began to come out in numbers with their wives and children to behold those ascetics. Seated in all kinds of cars and conveyance by thousands, vast numbers of Kshatriyas with their wives and Brahmins with theirs came out. And the concourse of Vaishyas and Shudras too was as large on the occasion. The vast assemblage was very peaceful, for every heart then was inclined to piety. There also came out Bhishma. The son of Shantanu, Somadatta, or Vahlika, and the royal sage Dhritarashtra. So, do you know who this Vahlika is? Who is this Vahlika? No. That's another. This is a single, not those sages. Hmm? No, because it says Sometata.
Was he the one who had his eyes?
No, that's Bhagadatta. He that I remember, he is the brother of Shantanu. Right? So that's why on the battlefield he says grandfathers, great grandfathers, fathers, sons. So he's one of the great grandfathers. Like that. And the royal sage Dhritarashtra, endued with the vision of knowledge. Vidura himself, the venerable Satyavati. The illustrious princess of Kosala and Gandhari, accompanied by the other ladies of the royal household, and the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, decked with various ornaments, also came out. The Kauravas then, accompanied by their priest, saluted the rishis by lowering their heads, and took their seats before them. The citizens also, saluting the ascetics, and bowing down unto them with touching the ground, took their seats there. Then Bhishma, setting that vast concourse perfectly still, duly worshipped, O King, those ascetics by offering them water to wash their feet, and the customary argya, right? Setting that vast concourse perfectly still means he told, you know, made everybody quiet. So it means you have to be very powerful to be able to quiet that many people who have come out to see what's going on, right? And having done this, he spoke to them about the sovereignty and the kingdom. Then the oldest of the ascetics, with matted locks on his heads and loins covered with animal skin, stood up, and with the concurrence of the other rishis, spoke as follows. Okay, so that means he came, so he told them about the kingdom, what's happening, everything's going nice, right? Because they've come, so they want to know how is everything, so like that. Then having done that, you know, pleasantries are exchange, then now the actual business. So the senior most stood up, but then still he took with the, how you say, the blessings or agreement of the other sages, then he spoke. He didn't just stand up and start speaking. He stood up, then took their, you know. In other words, senior men are there, then if there's others there, then also with their approval, then speaking goes on. Does that make sense? We even see this okay. You all know that possessor of the sovereignty of the Kurus, who is called King Pandu, had, after abandoning the pleasures of the world, repaired hence to dwell on the mountain of 100 peaks. Right? So he made it clear that who was the sovereign, not Dhritarashtra, was Pandu. He adopted the Brahmacharya mode of life, but for some from inscrutable purpose the gods have in view, this, his eldest son, Yudhishthira, was born there, begotten by Dharma himself. Right? So he's saying is that he adopted the Brahmacharya mode of life, but he still had sons. Right? So then he mentioned through Dharma himself. That illustrious king obtained from Vayu his other son, the foremost of all mighty men, called Bhima. This other son, begotten upon Kunti by Indra, is Dhananjaya, whose achievements will humble all bowmen in the world. Look here again at these tigers among men, mighty in the use of bow, the twin children begotten upon Madri by the twin Ashwinis, leading in righteousness the life of a vanaprastha in the woods. Illustrious Pandu hath thus revived the almost extinct line of his grandfather. The birth, growth, and Vedic studies of these children of Pandu will, no doubt, give you a great pleasure. Steadily adhering to the path of the virtuous and the wise, and leaving behind him these children, Pandu departed hence 17 days ago. His wife Madri, beholding him placed in the funeral pyre and about to be consumed, herself ascended the same pyre, and sacrificing her life thus, hath gone with her lord to the region reserved for chaste wives. accomplish now whatever rites should be performed for their benefit. These are the unburnt portions of their bodies. Here also are their children. These oppressors of foes with their mother. Let these now be received with due honors. After the completion of the first rites in honor of the dead, let the virtuous Pandu, who had all along been the supporter of the dignity of the Kurus, have the first annual Shraddha, Sapindakarana, performed with a view to installing him formally among the Pitris. Vaishampayana continued, the ascetics with Guhyakas, having said this unto the Kurus, instantly disappeared in the very sight of the people. Beholding the rishis and the siddhas thus vanish in their sight like vapory forms, appearing and disappearing in the skies, the citizens, filled with wonder, returned to their homes. Now the sages walked there. Why would they just disappear? Yeah, means then it makes, you know, it's, then the common people will take it more seriously. No? Because if they just walk off, then it's, well, maybe they said it right, maybe they're not. But if they all before their eyes disappear, then they're going to basically take what they said is true. Because otherwise everyone knows Pandu couldn't have children. So how now he has children, and now these children are going to be the kings. Does that make sense? Right, just like we have another example where they had to prove, all right, the sovereignty of the prince. Another story. Shakuntala. Right? So they had to wait until Bharat then refused until the demigods then made the point. And once they had made the point, then he was accepted. Right? Otherwise the common people, because no one knew about the marriage of Bharat, Dushmanta and Shakuntala, right? Because even the prime minister didn't go in to the ashram, so they wouldn't have known like that. So then sometimes, you know, it has to be very, very clear to the people, right? When you deal with kings, then they always deal like this, because you have to have the faith of the people, right? Otherwise you can't perform your duties, right? A Brahmin faith is there, that's best. So therefore they use various techniques like this. They disappear, or, you know, in palmistry or other things, they tell the future. They do other things like this, or, you know, stuff that you go, oh, okay, then this is very nice. Maybe not the future, the past, right? So then, you know, different methods are used. But even if people don't accept, they through their own sadhana can perfect their life, right? But the kshatriyas, it's through administration that they perfect themselves. Right, so therefore it has to work. People have to have faith. Right. Section 127. Vaishampayana continued, Dhritarashtra then said, O Vidura, celebrate the funeral ceremonies of that line amongst kings, namely Pandu and of Madri also, in right royal style. For the good of their souls, distribute cattle, claws, gems, and diverse kinds of wealth, everyone receiving as much as he asketh for. Make arrangements also for Kunti's performing the last rites of Madri in such a style as pleaseth her. And let Madri's body be so carefully wrapped up that neither the sun nor Vayu, god of wind, may behold it. Something? Lament not for the sinless Pandu. He was a worthy king and hath left behind him 5 heroic sons, equal unto the celestials themselves. Vaishampayana continued, Then Vidura, O Bharata, saying, so be it. So who is this, O king, O Bharata?
Maharaj
Janamejaya. Yeah. Right? It keeps coming up. So always remember, Vaishampayana is talking to Janamejaya. So be it. Vidura then said, so be it. In consultation with Bhishma, fixed upon a sacred spot for the funeral rites of Pandu, the family priests went out of the city without loss of time, carrying with them the blazing sacred fire fed with clarified butter and rendered fragrant therewith. Then friends, relatives, and adherents wrapping it up in cloth, decked the body of the monarch with the flowers of the season, and sprinkled various excellent perfumes over it. They also decked the hearse itself with garlands and rich hangings. Then, placing the covered body of the king with that of his queen on that excellent pier decked out so brightly, they caused it to be carried on human shoulders, with a white umbrella of state held over the hearse. Right? The white umbrella is for the kings, right? That's right. With waving yak tails and various sounds of various musical instruments, the whole scene looked bright and grand. Hundreds of people began to distribute gems among the crowd on the occasion of the funeral rites of the king. Right? Right? Because if you're in a crowd, how do you distribute things? So what can you distribute? Right? So they're distributing gems, easy to hand out. You know, gems this big, you know, like that. Yeah. Imagine that, you're sitting in the crowd, they come up to you and pour a handful of gems into your hands. And please accept this. Yes?
Like also what then Tridharsha said, that they should give opulence to the people as much as they want.
As much as they want.
Yes, yeah, so how, like,
so distributing wealth generally means that's to the Brahmins, how much they want. The Brahmins only ask for what they need. You know what I'm saying? Because does that make sense? They think how much I need, and so that much, whatever it is, if it's a lot or a little, but that's all they want, right? They have a big school, they have big facilities, they need more money. It's just them alone, they need less. Does that make sense? You know, they're with their wife, they need more. You know, so it just they'll decide whatever it is they need, and then they'll ask. Because the Brahmins, what they ask for, you know they need, you give them. Right? Does that make sense? And common people, then you distribute things just as gifts. That's just there. You know, you give food or this or that. But this specifically, for the good of their souls, distribute cattle, cloths, gems, and diverse kinds of wealth. Everyone receiving as much as he asks it for. So that specifically would be the Brahmins, right? And others then according to what would be the proper thing to distribute, what they need, then they would there. Plus, then another way of looking at it would be the citizens would be so, they're so pious, right, as mentioned before, that they wouldn't take more than they need anyway. Does that make sense? That nobody needs to be, one is greedy because one, there's the concept of shortened fall, right? One's thinking it's short, less. So that can create greediness, but, right? Yeah. Does that make sense? Right? But if one doesn't have a concept of, doesn't have a shortage mentality, one never needs more. You understand? Someone with a shortage mentality, then no matter how much they have, it's always less, even though they have more. Right? But someone who doesn't have that, no matter what they have, then it's always enough. You get more, nice. You have less, it works. Does that make sense? Someone else then?
Well, you said how Prabhupada gives sometimes this example of decorating a dead body.
Uh-huh.
It's useless. There is no no substance behind that. So why is it said that during this, you know, last rites, the dead body is decorated so much? Here it also says different kinds of perfumes and flowers.
He's the king. Right? The king always, well, there's a few things. Decorating the dead body means, okay, then, you know, you dress it up nicely just to dress it up. Right? But this is part of the ritual. You know, you're supposed to put a nice cloth, supposed to have other things there, so since it's the king, then it'll be, they'll do it more fancy. Does that make sense? Because if the king is just like everybody else, then what's special? The king's bigger than everybody else, fancier, richer, powerful, more everything. Therefore, people respect him, the common people. Does that make sense? The rishis don't need that to respect, right? But the common people do, right? So therefore, if the Vaishya thinks, I have more money than the king, why do I have to listen to them? Right? Or, you know, a warrior thinks, yes, I have more prowess than the king. You know, it's a problem. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's just part of the thing. They have to be bigger. It's part of the duty. Right? Otherwise, the common people will just take them as ordinary. Does that make sense? The priest, okay. At length, some beautiful robes, white umbrellas, and larger yak tails were brought for the great ceremony. The priest, clad in white, walked in the van of the procession, pouring libations of clarified butter on the sacred fire blazing in an ornamental vessel. The van is the back, right? Or is the van the front? Just said they were,
huh? It's the back.
Yeah, because normally when a king goes, the Brahmas always go in the front, right? But here they're going in the back because it's a funeral ceremony. Everything's reversed, right? You know, does that make sense? Like that. Okay. Pouring libations of clarified butter on the sacred fire blazing in an ornamental vessel. Brahmin Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras by thousands followed the deceased king, loudly wailing in these accents. O prince, where dost thou go, leaving us behind, making us forlorn and wretched forever? And Bhishma, Vidura, and the Pandavas also all wept aloud. As they came to the romantic wood on the banks of the Ganga, there they laid down the hearse on which the truthful and lion-hearted prince and his spouse lay. They then brought water in many golden vessels, washed the prince's body, besmeared before with several kinds of fragrant paste, and again smeared it over with sandal paste. They then dressed it in a white dress made of indigenous fabrics. With the new suit on, the king seemed as if he was living and only sleeping on a costly bed. When the other funeral ceremonies were also finished in consonance with the direction of the priests, the Kauravas set fire to the dead bodies of the king and the queen, bringing lotuses, sandal paste, and other fragrant substances to the pyre. Yes?
Why did the Kauravas start the fire?
Why did the Kauravas? Because they're all Kauravas. See, it means... You have the Kauravas, then within that you have the Pandavas and the Dhritarashtras, right? But within that, many times they just call the Dhritarashtras the Kauravas and then the Pandavas, right? So you get Kauravas, Pandavas, like that. But technically they're all Kauravas, because they're all in the Kuru dynasty. Does that make sense? So it's just, there's a distinction made there, because one, they're special, they're devotees, but Pandu is special, so therefore his sons are called by that. Dhritarashtra technically is not so special, so therefore they're called Kauravas. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yeah? Okay? Yeah. Who would light the fire? Normally the sun would light, but otherwise someone, you know, next in line, there's an order.
You mentioned that the queen has already left. She gave up the body when she said in the forest still, or and then they carried both their bodies?
Yeah. I mean, because they there was a funeral pyre there, but it seemed that it didn't really burn them, you know, much, but, you know, like that. But so she left with that fire. Like that. Generally in the fire, it's not so much that you get burnt up, as that means if someone's in a fire, it's that you can't breathe, because there's no air in the fire, so actually you suffocate. So like that, that's the
thing. Yeah. And why don't they really feel the fire, because the separation of their husbands,
yeah,
more.
Yeah, so it's just like all they're doing is walking in. They just walk in, and basically they walk in and walk out the other side. section. Oh, no, we haven't finished that. Then seeing the bodies aflame, Kaushalya burst out, "Oh, my son," and fell down senseless on the ground. Seeing her down, the citizens and the inhabitants of the provinces began to wail from grief and affection for the king. The birds of the air and the beasts of the field were touched by the lamentations of Kunti. And Bhishma, the son of Shantanu, and the wise Vidura, along with the others that were there, became disconsolate. Thus weeping, Bhishma, Vidura, Dhritarashtra, the Pandavas, and the Kuru ladies all performed the watery ceremony of the king. What does that mean, the watery ceremony? Yeah, the tarpana. It means after the burning is finished, then the ashes are put in the water. When that's all finished, then they're all in the water halfway. They offer water. I mean, they take their bath and then offer water. Yes.
How come the son of Vidrashtra is not mentioned
there? Because here, just all the main persons are mentioned. You know, you can't mention everybody. They mention in the beginning, you know, but here they just say some. Right, because Bhishma, Vidura, Dhritarashtra, they're the senior most of that side, and then the Pandavas, and then the Kuru ladies, right? Also, I think it's because these ones are senior, they're connected, while the Dhritarashtras are just cousins, it's not so important.
Bringing out an emotional scene.
Yeah, like that also. Okay. When all this was over, the people themselves, filled with sorrow, began to console the bereaved sons of Pandu. And the Pandavas, with their friends, began to sleep on the ground. Seeing this, the Brahmanas... Seeing this, the Brahmanas and other citizens also renounced their beds. Young and old, the citizens grieved on account of the sons of the king of Pandu, and passed 12 days in mourning with the weeping Pandavas. So you see also just how expertly then he presents, you know, just the main details that are important, and then goes through. So just that he says that they perform the watery ceremony means everything else is complete. You don't have to describe it, right? Because the culture is common. So then knowing that culture, then by just referring to certain points, then you know actually what's happening, what's going on. Okay. Is there any other questions? Because otherwise it's only 2 minutes. Yes.
The Brahma point here, the Ashoja and big enough when the Vyasinara was done. How come wasn't started before then she found the diet?
Because they just performed the rites. So once the rites are done, that's when it's done. You know? I'm saying you take from when the rites are performed, then you go that many days.
Would you also connection with when the Emu's wishes, they say that
means Brahmins means a normal thing of Brahmins, unless they're doing a vrata or something, then there isn't one. But otherwise, Brahmins 10 days, then Kshatriyas 12, Vaishyas 15, Shudras 30, like that. So here, then the 12 days, then they practiced. See, because those who are performing vrata, then it's important the vrata does, because the point is when in the state of asaucha, you can't do any rituals. You can't worship the deities, do yajnas, do any of these kinds of things. So those who are doing those things don't stop those, they don't become impure. So therefore, someone performing a vow does not become impure. So that's why then it's followed separately. You know, but a family who's just, you know, performing their family duties and all that, then they would practice that. One is because the other is performing the vows, so they have something that will keep them absorbed and things like that. right? The other is then the general tendency is for that many days they will feel bad, right? Brahmins for 10, Kshatriyas 12, Vaishyas 15, Shudras 30. It's just their mental state. That's how long they will be lamenting. So they wouldn't be able to do things properly during that time anyway. Does that make sense? So then, so it's designed according to the natural psychology. Is that okay? Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you.